Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Well, I'm Paula Nunes, and you're listening to the Taz and Paula Show, and we're waiting for our callers to call in. So while we're doing that, I'm going to play some music. Just a moment.
Song about a neighbor, sanctified was she, could bring a bad situation to a state of harmony. And when I'm feeling sad, or when I feel I've been denied, I think about the neighbor.
Hi, this is Paula. Is this Taz?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Hold on, and I'll see if our guest is with us. Just a moment.
Okay.
Hello? Hi, Anna. Is that you?
It is me.
Oh, great. We'll introduce you now.
Great. Thank
well,
you.
Anna, Anna Joanna's story begins with the problem at hand. Big agricultural is unnatural and unsubstantial. The news isn't actually all that new. We've been talking about this for a long time. And it's not rocket science for sure. We've all heard at this point that pesticides are bad, that industrialized agriculture leads to mistreated and unhealthy animals and subsequently depleted products. Well, our guest today has created a film by the name of Fresh, and it goes into this, and it goes into how we as individual communities can do something about this. So we're going to be talking to Anna Sophia Joanna, and I'm Paula Nunes.
And I'm Taz Powers. Well, Anna Sophia Joanna was born in Portugal and grew up in Switzerland. Following a travel abroad program exploring the impact of globalization on the environment and culture, she then came to the U.S. to study. Anna received her BA in political science from Barnard College and then graduated from Columbia Law School, where she was awarded as a Stone Scholar and Human Rights Fellow. And before dedicating herself to filmmaking, Anna found REEL, that's R-E-E-L, Youth Incorporated, a video production program for youth coming out of detentions and others served youth.
Well, Anna's first documentary, Generation Meds, explored our fears and misgivings about mental illness and medication. Her second documentary is Fresh, that celebrates the farmers, thinkers, and business people across America who are reinventing our food system. Anna, this is such an honor to have you with us today, and we have so much to cover, so thank you for taking the time to be with us, and welcome.
Thank you so much.
So when you were going to school, law school, and did you have any idea that you'd be making and creating films?
No, not clearly not during law school. Otherwise I would have quit.
So what led you to, the first film that you made. It sounds really incredible. And what led you to your first film?
Well, you know, I made really like a real youth. The company I started, the non-for-profit I started before making Generation Meds, is really kind of the link between law school and making my first documentary. When I was in law school, I was very concerned, very passionate about issues of juvenile justice and racial disparities in our judicial system in general. And I felt that, and I had always been volunteering through college and law school with youth in the community, but I felt that trying to communicate my concerns and what I was learning both in school and by volunteering to others was really difficult, and that either people felt defensive when I was raising some of these issues, or when they agreed with me, it was a very theoretical agreement. These were not people, children, sister, brothers. They were numbers. And so, you know, I felt a sense of, you know, that it didn't matter whether people agreed with me because it wasn't going to lead to change in the system. And towards the end of my law school career, I went to see a documentary, and the woman who had produced the documentary was herself a former lawyer, and she talked about the work of her organization. It's an organization called Witness, and they provide cameras and training to community members and not-for-profit leaders all around the world with the goal of bringing these human rights abuse to the attention of Americans and to the attention of our Congress and the UN and, you know, international bodies, basically, who may be able to then take action once you have not only the evidence of human rights abuse, but you've brought it to the attention and you've made people feel, emotionally feel, what's happening in these diverse countries. And I really came to realize that despite the fact that we think of ourselves as rational being, moved by facts and numbers, we really are not. We're really emotional creatures. And what we need in order to be moved to take action is to connect with a story, to connect with a person, a character. And that films are really good at that, you know. Reports and books and lengthy article are very good at exposing the facts of what's going on. But movies can really open you up emotionally, tell you a story that you might not know about or that you might know about but not feel connected to, and then, make you feel sufficiently involved, sufficiently concerned, I guess, to perhaps take a necessary action to bring some change about. So that's really what brought me to making documentaries. And initially, the first documentary was about mental illness, as you pointed out, and then eventually Fresh.
So Fresh was produced in, came out in 2009?
Yes.
Well, I know personally when I watch documentaries on television that some of them really get to my heart and really opens my wanting to be involved. And I think the documentary Fresh really leads to this. And there's so many things in Fresh that really I have wanted to speak out on our radio show for a long time. And one of them, I know we're really into pesticides. We want to get rid of pesticides. Why is organic food so expensive when they're not even using pesticides?
Oh, well, that's quite a complicated question, even though it sounds so simple and obvious. There is, so let's try to go through like some of the factors that create this cost disparity between organic and conventional. One of the main issues is that you are paying, if not at the counter, you are paying through subsidies to your taxes for this apparently cheap industrial food. So right now our tax dollars are going towards these really, really, really large subsidies for industrial farmers, mostly for the production of corn and soy and canola, you know, that kind of crop. And it's and so because these crops can be produced below, can be sold to big companies below production cost, they end up in everything that we eat. So that's, you know, the reason why sugar was replaced by high fructose corn syrup in Coca-Cola, for instance, is because it became cheaper to buy corn and to turn it into high fructose corn syrup than to buy sugar, because we subsidize it. So that's one fact. You are paying for it. You're just paying for it indirectly. The second thing is that there are a lot of costs that are externalized. And what that means is that, you know, we have an incredibly high health bill in this country. Us personally, as individual, we are, our health is deteriorating and we're paying for it, you know, not only in our well-being, but, you know, in our increasing doctor and medication bills. But as a country, we are, you know, the loss in productivity and the cost of serving all of these sick people is incredibly high. And to a large extent, it is directly related to our diet and to incredibly unhealthy processed food that has become the basis of our diet. And that is in itself, again, related to these subsidies that make this kind of food, this processed food, this packaged food, if you will, so prominent in our culture, in our diet. So those are two aspects of the cost that people don't think about. They really think about, like, you know, I go to McDonald's and I can have a meal for $4. Clearly, if I go to the supermarket and I want to buy some fresh organic fruit and vegetable, I'm not going to be able to pay $4. The truth, though, is that even at the counter, this disparity is not as true as people would like to make it sound. So, yes, if you go to the farmer's market and you buy a pound of organic apple, it's going to be more expensive, very likely, than if you go to your Walmart or some other supermarket and buy also a pound of apple there. That's not usually what people compare one thing to the other. Like, what they compare is processed food with organic, or the truth of their buying habit, I should say, is between processed food and fresh food. I'm a member of a food co-op in Brooklyn, New York, and the cost of organic food in my co-op and of local food in my co-op is as cheap or cheaper than conventionally grown food. So it's possible to buy food that's organic or that's local just as cheap as conventional. But often we are comparing, like, really, like, world apart things. And, you know, also what I think is unfair in the comparison is that if you look at the way people shop when they go to the supermarket, that they mostly buy, you know, they'll buy the 2 liter of soda and the large size, you know, chips to go with, you know, their white bread and, you know, their sausage, already made sausage, or maybe their microwave item. And, you know, they might feed a large family with these things. But, like, if you were to buy a bag of fresh potatoes and fry them yourself, you would have a lot more food for your money. If you just didn't buy the very cheap, accordingly, you know, like, the 2 liter of Coca-Cola is not expensive, considering, but it's nothing, you're not nourishing yourself with that whatsoever. So if you put that money and you added a few dollars to the apples that you would buy, so that you can have something sweet in your diet, but that's also nourishing, then you could maybe buy them organic and buy a couple more dollars. So I think that often this comparison is actually more that we've come to consider food to be just another commodity, you know, like a widget. And our only concern with the widget is that it should be cheap and convenient. But an apple is not an apple is not an apple, you know, like they can be completely different products. This really great organization called the Environmental Working Group just came out with their Dirty Dozen list. It's a list of the worst offender in terms of pesticide residue. And apples are the very top of that list. So when you give your child an apple, thinking you're doing something good for him or her, you might actually give your child a product that's full of pesticide residue. Not only one pesticide, but often as many as 10 different pesticides can be found on the skin of an apple. And very likely, because of the way it's produced, it might be not as rich in nutrient anyway than another apple. So they're not equal products, and they maybe we shouldn't compare them in that way just according to cost.
And I know I just went through a list of the vegetables and fruits that are most have the most pesticides, and bell pepper I was like right on top of, and green beans.
Right,
so,
and the other ones that are very important because they're in everything now that we've reached, you know, summertime is strawberry and blueberries. I know that it's, you know, many of us' favorite treat, and yet it's, you know, not healthy at all. And it's not even that it's only, like, the fresh strawberries and blueberries, but, like, you know, any product that you would buy that has strawberry or blueberry has conventionally strawberry and blueberry, and it's not like the pesticide residue goes away once you have put it in an ice cream, you know?
Yeah.
It's still there. And so, you know, we forget that, you know, it adds up in our system, all of these, you know, toxins.
Well, we have in California. Pardon me? Go ahead.
Well, I was just talking about, you know, the safety of our food supply is something that we really need to be aware of. And I'm thinking, is there anything that you can cover as far as shedding a light on where maybe we can improve the safety of our food supply that we do receive? Perhaps people can't get natural foods, but, you know, that they can do such and such to make perhaps the food that they do get more edible and with
absolutely
more support for their body.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd urge anyone who's listening to sign up to our mailing list. If they go to freshthemovie.com, you can sign up to my mailing list. Once a week, we send a tip, a fresh tip. And just this week, we send, as part of our fresh tip, the Dirty Dozen and Clean 15, which is basically saying, okay, we all have a tight budget. We all have to make decisions on what we eat, where we spend our money. Well, these are the 12 vegetables you should really, fruits and vegetables you should really avoid because of, you know, pesticide residue. And those are the ones that, you know, are not as bad. If your concern, of course, is health. There are other reasons to avoid conventional food, period, regardless of pesticide residue. But so we provide this kind of information to people following us on our list. The other tip that we've provided before is how to avoid genetically modified organisms, GMOs, which most Americans are not even aware are in over 70% of the processed food that we eat. And they don't know what GMOs mean, and we have no idea what the impact is. So, you know, part of what we do with Fresh is really trying to educate, bring a little bit more awareness and then solutions, because we're really solution-focused. We don't want to freak people out. We need to eat. We need to enjoy food. It's such a big part of our lives and a big pleasure in our life. We don't want to make it seem like, you know, you just rather ignore this issue. It's actually, there's very easy solution to most of that stuff. So you just mentioned, you know, apple, peppers, strawberries, blueberries, you know, try to get them organic if you can. Those are quite full of pesticides. But there's plenty of other fruits and vegetables that that if you can still get conventionally, you can. Obviously, fruits and vegetables that have to be peeled, you know. Bananas and, you know, watermelons. You're not going to get very much residue with fruits like that. I actually don't have the list in front of my eyes, but I can look it up and tell you more. With a more general advice that we give people is if you want to avoid genetically modified organisms, GMOs, buy organic for anything that's processed. And what we mean by processed is that if it's in a package, potato chips, if it has a list of ingredients, so it's not just a whole chicken or an apple. If it's something that has been already cooked and combined and processed in one way or another and put into a package, and you can actually turn it around and look at what's in it, it's gonna have basically GMOs in it. So the way to avoid that is to buy organic, so organic potato chips, organic soups, organic syrups, organic, et cetera, so that you avoid the GMOs. And then we, on the website, we have a shopping guide. and the Shopping Guide is kind of helping people work through all of these issues, because marketing now is so incredibly misleading and confusing. What's natural, what's naturally raised, what's fresh, what's organic, what's free range, what are all these terms that they bombard you with, and can you trust them? And so we help people kind of work through, processed products, or fruits and vegetables, milk and dairy in general, and then animal products, and help you kind of figure out, what are your priority for any one of these categories, and how to go about then making the best purchasing decisions based on these, on your priorities. And it's a process. You can't, jump through. You can't figure it out overnight. But it's actually once you start caring about these issues and realizing the power of your power in improving your own health and well-being and pleasure, but also your community well-being and health, I think that it's quite easy to make these changes.
Well, I think too, if we all start buying more organic, then the money starts to talk also. I mean, they're going to see that the people want organic foods.
Yeah, it's already happened quite a bit. I mean, there's a reason why Walmart now has, carries organic, and why it's so much more available to the general public. It is because, as you point out, the money talks, and people's purchasing decision as are very far-reaching.
Can we please have you let people know, because maybe people are not aware of what genetically modified organisms means. So maybe...
Yeah, it's a very hard one to explain, because the way we've grown fruits and vegetables for thousands of years is that we've, taking the best head of corn that we've had, and we've replanted those seeds, hoping to kind of slowly and surely breed a species of corn that was resilient maybe to, the specific weather that you have the tendency to have drought, and you might have picked the corn that seemed to have been most resilient to drought, corn that was maybe resilient to the kind of pests that you have in your area, or maybe just the sweetest corn that you could find. And then there is also hybrid, farmers have forever now, taking two different kind of it could be two chickens or two fruits and married them together, and the way of creating these hybrids will depend on whether it's an animal or fruits or vegetable, and I don't know those techniques. I'm far from being a farmer, but they're basically two of the same species being, mixed together to bring out the best element that you can, So if it's the flavor, the resilience, the size, whatever characteristic you like about that animal or that plant or that fruit, you try to breed for it. And farmers have become very, very good at this. And what they've done for centuries is also save seeds and develop their breed of animal and then pass it from generation to generation, etc. What's happened, though, with genetically modified organisms is that using new technologies, we've been able to cross completely different species. So one example that is kind of like the most shocking of them and the most easily to like kind of visualize is that we have a kind of a GM, a genetically modified tomato that has the gene of a fish in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that just shows you like how not possible in nature that could be, right? Like a fish and a tomato cannot breed, they cannot cross pollinate. It would not be possible in nature. But with technology, we've been able to, using a very powerful gun, inject forcefully the gene of a fish into the tomato for very specific characteristics that they're looking to develop, and. We've done the same for corn and soy and canola, and those are the three main crops, and cotton, but we don't eat cotton, right? But for these three crops, we've done it with a purpose. Those have been developed mostly for the purpose of being able to resist a pesticide called Roundup. Roundup Ready is an incredibly powerful pesticide. Most of us know it because we use it in our garden. And it's a general pesticide that will kill everything it touches. So this company, Monsanto, has developed corn and soy and canola and cotton that will actually, if you spray it with a plane or with a helicopter, so if you completely, like, cover your field with this pesticide, actually it's a herbicide, excuse me, everything else, all the herbs you don't want will die, but your corn will actually survive. So they've made this plant resistant to the pesticide that they sell. Very clever marketing.
Yeah.
And that's the only benefit. It doesn't make for a more tasty corn, a more resilient corn, none of that. On the contrary. And so it's a very specific kind of benefit. And the concerns are, there's tons of environmental concerns that I'll spare you because they are quite complicated and technical. And you know, maybe some of your listeners are interested in listening to this. But since we're talking about health and avoiding products that might be dangerous to our health, the main issue is that really we're basically guinea pigs. There is this new kind of food that's completely a new thing, right? Because these crops that are able to resist a very powerful pesticide, herbicide, they have the gene of a bacteria within them, for instance. And or different, actually, you know what? There's two different kinds. I'm not going to go into details because I'm going to actually say things that are wrong, but they're a new form of life, and we don't know the impact on our health, and we're basically being used as guinea pig for no benefit for ourselves. It's just the benefit for these very few companies, and there are more and more evidence that there are actually negative health impacts by them. The companies are claiming that they aren't, but there are more and more evidence that it does affect the development. You know, they've been testing it on baby rats and mice, and they're seeing a pretty scary impact on the neurological development of these babies. And there's also concern about cancers. There's concerns about allergies. And so there is at least a very real possibility that eating so many genetically modified organisms could be harmful to our health, and there's certainly no proof that it's not harmful to our health. And there's a clear preference among Americans that if they have a choice, if they were told this has GMOs and this does not have GMOs, that they would choose to go with non-genetically modified organisms. Unfortunately, we don't have that choice because nothing is labeled. So you can't go to the grocery store and specifically look for non-GMO food. The only way you can do that really at this point is to eat organic, because organic still requires to not have any GMO byproducts. So I hope this is helpful. I know it's a lot of detail, but I hope it's still somewhat helpful.
I was thinking perhaps, you know, just as you're talking, I mean, you know, why should we be genetically modified? And consuming some of these things, we never know what really the package will be on the other end, because it's all experimental.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and plus the meat that we eat, the beef, the pork, they all eat the modified corn, and they're fed that, correct?
Right, exactly, yeah. And actually there is now, there was a scientist, a very mainstream, well-respected scientist in a big institution who has sent a letter of alarm to the FDA, saying that there is now, there has been a number of very widespread crop failure in the Midwest that seems to be related to Roundup Ready and to a pest that's very much that's associated with Roundup Ready. So there is, crop failure and all of the consequences to the farmers, to the environment, to our food supply, etc. But then the other thing that he pointed out too is that a bunch of farmers are going bankrupt because there is what do you call it? Not abortion, when an animal loses a baby, a fetus.
Miscarriage.
So there's been all of these animals who have had either unable to produce, or more mostly just having these, you know, very, very high rate of miscarriage. And they're also associating that with I can't think of the word, but with a germ or you know, something, you know, hurtful to our health that comes from genetically modified corn. So
bacteria.
Well, it's not a bacteria though. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the technical term would be, but it's a byproduct of Roundup Ready corn, which is a genetically modified corn, and they've been, and so there is now a possibility. I mean, again, those are not proven studies, but it's like a, you know, a scientist who's well respected in his field, who's been studying this and seeing some causal relationship that is quite worrying between these genetically modified crops and the animals that eat them, and who are suddenly having these high rates of
miscarriages.
Miscarriage, thank you. I don't know why I can't think of that word. Probably because I'm very pregnant and not wanting to think of miscarriage. But,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
The question then is, you know, they've had another study out in Canada showing that both that the they found in the a placenta of mothers and in their own unborn baby, the same, you know, basically this not a bacteria, I don't know what it's called, in, you know, they found it in the, you know, in the blood of unborn babies. So we are being, and you know, what if it was also causing, you know, miscarriage to women, to us, like that, you know, this you know, because if it's going to the animal, then it can be passed on to us. You know, like I think that basically we just don't know the impact, and there is no good reason to have genetically modified foods in our market. It's just benefiting a few companies. So, you know, again, like, why are we risking our health? You know, and let's assume that there was no health problem and that we could eventually prove that. Okay, fine. But, like, why take the risk when there is no benefit to you and I as consumers? There is no benefit to the environment. There is no benefit to the farmers. There's a benefit to a very small number of companies that are making tons of money on this. It's a ridiculous situation.
Well, we live in California, and there is we have these great big farmer markets all the time, all over, and so they're not all organic, but at least it's grown locally.
Yeah, and you know, often these even when it's not organic, it's usually like a family farm, you know, where the folks who are going to be growing the food are living there, and they're not migrant workers, and they're doing the work themselves. And so the likelihood of them using, you know, this really huge amount of pesticides that are harmful to, you know, the health of the farm workers, the health of the community, and to your health, you know, are quite limited. And most of these farms use what's called integrated pest management, which means that they use a bunch of techniques to reduce the amount of chemicals that they need to use on their fields. So you're still talking about a much healthier product, not only for you, but, you know, for the watershed and for the community in general.
Now, even though maybe you buy organic corn, are these farmers that are actually growing the organic products, can the big farms that are next door to them, say, like only a few
mm-hmm.
miles away, does that cross-pollinate with the organic and create a problem?
Yes, absolutely. You know, that's the main issue. This is why we're fighting so hard for, you know, we were so hoping to stop, you know, alfalfa, genetically modified alfalfa, to hitting the market, because with cross-pollination, it could be just a few years before there is no more non-genetically modified alfalfa in all of the U.S. because you can't contain something that travels through with wind, right? You know, you take alfalfa,
right,
and there is a little grain, and then the wind blows and it travels to another part of another field, somebody else's field, and to the wild, and then it breeds the wilderness, and then eventually this new species, this new entity, genetically modified organism, breeds itself into everything that's around it. So It's very, 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 very hard to get genetically non-GMO soy, for instance, because it's cross-pollinated so much that it's very hard to find a pure corn, I mean soy. And, you know, they went down to South America, and they found in all of these, you know, South America has hundreds of different species of corn. You know, we tend to think of corn as being only one thing, but in culture where corn is a very traditional food and very basic to their diet, there were hundreds of different species available, and species that were adapted for high in the mountain, species for, you know, drought kind of area, desert type of areas. So not only species that were different in terms of taste and texture and, you know, where are you going to use it in tortilla or fresh, etc., but also species that were very well adapted to the conditions. And they found basically GMO everywhere. It's already gone that far, and it's spread all over the, you know, all over South America. So yeah, that is one of the big reasons that we feel as opponents to genetically modified organisms that we need to stop their planting altogether, because you can't contain it. You can preserve non-GMO from contamination.
I was just going to say the same thing. Go ahead.
Okay, we are speaking today with Anna Sophia Joannis, producer and director of the recently released documentary Fresh. The movie Fresh is a call to action intending to inspire viewers and to positive change and portray a hopeful message about possibilities for sustainable food. And I was just kind of thinking here that maybe, you know, how can we make the type of work that Joel Salatin and Will Allen do in Fresh a reality in our neighborhood? Is you know, how do we go about that?
So, you know, my answer, the easy answer for me is, you know, host a screening of Fresh. Because, you know, the whole way we've distributed Fresh is through this community screening. So people will go to the website and license the movie for a home screening or for a community screening that they'll host at their place of worship or at their school or at their place of work. And often we've had these, you know, from very small to very large screening where the organizer, the host would invite local experts or farmers or non-for-profits to come and answer questions or to showcase their work after the screening. And so the goal of that is to bring people to, you know, to get them very excited about what the alternatives are, what the solutions are, what people like Joel Salatin and Will Allen are doing, but then to connect them with other people in their community that are going to be excited of and wanting to make some changes in their lives, and so that they're not on their own, that they can get some advice and support from their peers, but also to connect them directly to what's happening in their community. So very likely it is happening in your community. There is a Joel Salatin, there is a Will Allen where you live. But how do you learn about him or her? How do you learn about the organizations that are supporting them? Or hosting a screening of Fresh or going to a screening of Fresh is really one great way to do that. There is, you know, even if it's not through a screening of Fresh, I think that the first step is to kind of find out what's going on in your community, whether it is by becoming a member of a food co-op, by going to the farmer's market and asking some questions to the farmers, by just looking up which organizations are very engaged in your community, in your town or in your county. So it's doing a little bit of research and finding out who's who and then connecting with other people. We can't make those changes on our own. We need, you know, we need support from our families and friends and then from the larger community.
Now, after the Fresh has come out, I mean, it's been out for 2 years now, have you heard some really great stories of what your film actually inspired a community to do?
Well, you know, we are constantly getting these great emails I'm getting a lot on the individual basis. I get a lot of people emailing to me. You know, a fresh re-energized them, that they had stopped thinking that their action could make a difference, that they had, that the values were there, the desire to contribute positively to their community, to the health of the world was there, but that they felt like it was meaningless, that you couldn't make a difference, and that they felt renewed in their, that, you know, their commitment to participate in the world, you know, to be active participant and to make a positive difference. So I think those are always very satisfying email to me, because this is really what it's about to me. Is I think we are so bombarded with doom and gloom stories that we feel really disengaged, powerless, and it's a false notion that we really are not just passive observer in the world. We are participants. We have the ability to create the world that we want, and so. But the only way to do that is to participate, to feel engaged, to feel hope. And so I think that renewed hope is really one of the things that I'm hearing a lot about from people in the community. I'm also getting a lot of emails from folks saying, you know, my parents or my husband or, you know, my friends have been rolling their eyes at years for me for talking about organic and, you know, talking about these issues. And watching Fresh is the first time that they got it. Because Fresh is not righteous, it's not preachy, it's not political in the most controversial sense of the word, you know. So people will actually, like, react to it very differently than a lot of these conversations around food or the environment or these kind of things. So one of the things that's nice is that people get hurt, you know, by their family and friends, people that have been passionate about these issues. So it's a great way to share the passion. In terms of communities, I mean, some of the best stuff that I've heard is, some of the people that have watched Fresh, you know, almost 2 years ago, have started their non-for-profit. This one woman that I can think of that was just portrayed in our blog, she started a non-for-profit in the D.C. area after watching Fresh. And it was inspired by Will Allen, and it's all around composting. And we've had just incredibly great screening in churches, which I think is quite a good place for Fresh to be, because it is, after all, an ethical conversation. And so, you know, place of worship are a good place to start having ethical conversations. And we've had these really large screenings. I can think of one that I participated in Virginia, where we had, I think, 500 or 700 people coming for this screening in this church. And they had brought dozens of farmers and artisan, you know, like food makers, and, you know, all of these people came in and tasted all of the food made, like, in the area, and then we watched the movie, and then we had a panel of local people coming, you know, besides me being there and talking about what they're doing, and it was just, you know, such a large community, and then they started a food task force at the church to implement some of the stuff that are discussed in the movie. And so I don't know what they've done with a task force since, but I think that's great. I think a lot of people get more, you know, get inspired to get just involved in the community. A lot of fundraising happens with Fresh, that kind of thing.
You know, I mean, I had a vision.
Yeah, I did too.
I just had a vision whereby I could see everyone taking some portion of their yard and growing one item, you know, and everybody doing this like on a block. Can you imagine? Someone would grow tomatoes, someone would grow cucumbers, someone would grow whatever. And then on the weekend, everybody would pluck their fruit and put it on tables in the middle of the street and just have the option of being able to have some fresh fruit.
Yeah, no, that's a lovely, lovely vision. But you know what's funny is that in most of the United States, it's still offensive to replace a lawn with food. So I have friends who were growing some food in their front yard in Beacon, New York, in the little town of Beacon, New York, and they got a complaint because they replaced, you know, and it looks pretty, but to me it looks pretty, and you know, but so somehow it, you know, it needs to get to that place in our consciousness where people embrace and are excited to walk to walk by lawns and instead see in the front yard of all of their neighbor to see food growing, and that they would be excited by that instead of being like, oh, that's offensive, like, where's the green grass? It's also important to know that we use more pesticides in our lawns than we use in agriculture. You know, lawns are one of the most hurtful environmental thing that you could do. So it's not only that, you know, you'd be growing food, it's that you'd be replacing a very consuming species. You know, like, it needs a lot of water and it needs a lot of chemicals to grow nice green grass, you know? So we need to get off that bad habit that was, you know, that somehow we got into.
Well, I heard that some community in Oregon, the whole community started vegetable gardens in their front yards. So that's what we need to do.
Oh, that's really exciting. Yeah, that's a beautiful idea.
Now, what I see in my eyes is a whole expo or conference where all the farmers and even the restaurants who serve fresh foods from the community all come together and let people test, and then they can, you know, it would just be a good expo for people to explore what's in their own community. And I think I read it on your blog, on Fresh Blog, that if somebody bought $10 a week worth of organic food or food from your local area, that would really help support the local farmers.
If you do what? I'm sorry, I lost
just
you
buy,
in the middle.
Just buy $10, at least $10 a
right.
week from the local farmer.
Right, right.
That would really support them.
Oh, yeah, goodness. I mean, you know, again, we tend to think in all or nothing. You know, like, if I'm not going to only buy from the farmer's market, you know, then what's the point? Like, we tend to have very high expectation of ourselves when it comes to making this food choice or these changes in our food choices. When in fact it's really a lot less ambitious, and you can have an incredible impact, as you point out, with just $10 a week. So it could be that, you know, for a variety of concern, you don't want to buy eggs. It could be that you're tired of those salmonella outbreaks and you want to buy it from a small local farm that you know have their, you know, chicken roaming around, and that you know that the eggs are going to be much fuller of omega-3s, and so they're going to be better for you. You know that the chickens are treated well, so you don't have to feel guilty about the abuse of the animal, and you're protecting your family very likely from salmonella. It's not a guarantee, but much less likely than from an industrial process. So, you know, here are your motivation. And so, like, eggs are the one thing that you're really going to, you know, kind of put a little bit more money and have these beautiful eggs, and, you know, and once you taste them and you see the color in the egg, you know, you'll never go back anyway. And so, you know, you're going to, and if you add you to all of the other people that are making a similar change, you're going to suddenly have this ripple effect in the whole region where a lot of people that were struggling to make ends meet in their farm can now turn to egg production in order to survive. So it is, you know, our $10 just adds up, and we can have an incredible, and it's not only on the farmer. It's also important to understand that it's a whole farm-based economy. So it's the guys who are going to, you know, the little trucks, it's the cartons, it's the couple middlemen in there. It's the added value product. If you have local honey, and then you make local, like, little lipstick with local honey, or if you have, you know, cattle ranchers who are, and then you have the sausage, you know, those are added value products. And, you know, or the soybeans, the organic soybeans, and then the tofu maker, you know, those are all kind of added value products that create new jobs. And we need local jobs. You know, we need meaningful, healthy, and local jobs to revitalize our community. So, the $10 really do have a ripple effect in the economy.
That's funny, because that's the name of your film company, isn't it? Ripple?
Yes, it is.
So, I have to research this to make sure that I'm telling the truth here, that we can write off organic food now on our taxes.
Really?
So, yeah.
No idea. Never heard
anyway,
of that. But that would be very interesting.
If this started in 2011, I read it somewhere, so I will have to make sure that that is actually the truth.
Yeah.
But that would be wonderful. That would push people into eating more organic food.
Yeah, no, that would be quite an idea.
I watched a documentary, and it was about Monsanto.
Uh-huh.
And they're going into other countries, and... just ruining the crops in other countries. And
yeah.
The little children that had to walk across the fields to go to school or go to the store of these fields were coming down with cancer because they were walking through the fields that had been sprayed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so hopefully other countries are stopping it as well as hopefully we will.
Yeah, no, it is, you know, I mean, that's the difficulty. I mean, there is a whole market outside of the U.S., so even if we, you know, I mean, we have an incredible impact on the world. It is really kind of the difficulty is that, you know, we need to not only make sure that we stop eating these, I mean, it's like the cigarette industry, right? I mean, like, you know, people are not really smoking that many cigarettes anymore in the U.S. There's been, you know, whatever... changing consciousness has happened in this country for the most part. And so the cigarette companies just went to China, you know, and they're still selling tons and tons and tons of cigarettes to children in China. So, you know, it's an old story. It's an old story.
So people should jump on your website and join it because you have the blog and you've got the tips every month. So that's FreshTheMovie.com. We want everybody
yes.
to write that down because there's a lot of tips that come over, and there's blogging, so you can actually learn from the blogging.
Yeah, and petitions as well. We're running a petition now to ask that genetically modified food be labeled because we believe that if consumer had a choice, they wouldn't eat it, and we think it's going to make a huge difference in the. Not only it would give us a meaningful choice in what we eat, but I think it would really affect, you know, in general, the whole market of these crops. So, you know, there's a petition you can sign on the website, and we on a regular basis provide meaningful actions to our supporters because we know that people care about these issues and they want to be able to speak up and affect change, you know, in the government. So we you know, provide that service as well.
I just lost my thought. I had a question for you. I just lost it. It went off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Let me see where I was going on this one. I had a question. Taz, do you have a question? Oh, I don't know if Taz is there. Hello?
I'm here.
Oh.
I just, there was a listener that called in, and he said, you know, to support the local farmers because they really know the process, how to do things, and you know, it, like he says,
yeah.
in your home garden or whatever, it takes a lot of excess water and et cetera, and energy, and just by supporting a local farmer, you'll go ahead and support.
Plus, I think it's healthier. I read somewhere, Taz and Anna, that if you eat food within your own region,
mm-hmm.
in your own local area, that the food that's grown where you live is actually more healthier for you than if you get food from another state or another country.
Only for a multitude of reasons. I mean, you know, the food, as it waits in transit, loses a lot of its nutrients, especially when you're thinking about green vegetables. You know, they don't. And then often food that has traveled a very long time was picked when it wasn't ripe, and it ripens in transit, and it's very likely that means it's less nutritious, you know, and also much less tasty, you know. anyone who's had a fresh tomato, a really, you know, wine ripened tomato will tell you that it has nothing to do with what we buy at the supermarket. So there's definitely, and then there is, you know, a lot of issues of, things like honey, when it's raw, when it's not processed, when it's local, it's a way to natural fight allergies because it has all of the pollen in it. So it's like you're building resistance to the pollen that's in your area, and so you're less likely to then react negatively when it's pollen season and, you know, suddenly the allergies start up. So it is a medicine. And it's probably true for a lot of the other foods, too, that there is something about being nourished with local water and with the soil in your area that actually has an impact on our body. We just don't understand that impact very well yet, you know, because you can't really study it so easily. Nature is much more complex than we are able to, you know, break it down into its parts. You know, we keep thinking we can break things down to their parts, but we're more than our parts.
Now, the seeds that you grow, that you buy for your gardens, they can be a genetic modified also, can't they?
They can be, yeah. I mean, there is, you know, again, like the main crops that are genetically modified are the, you know, the corn, soy, canola, cotton. Those are the main crops. There is some tomatoes, I mentioned, zucchinis, papayas.
Noticed that when you're growing tomatoes, maybe 10 years ago, you'd get all kinds of little baby tomatoes all over, you know, reproducing, but now you don't.
Well, so there's two things. They're genetically modified, and there's just, like, a different kind of hybrid that you can get. So those are two different issues. It's very possible that they've been doing more and more seedless. You know, obviously, if you're going to plant a species of vegetables or food that don't have seeds, they're not going to be able to reproduce. It's like basically they're guaranteed to be infertile. So that could be the reason. I don't know, with the tomatoes, that it's just a one crop only seed. I don't really know. I'm not. I don't grow anything. I'm useless in that way. So I can't really help it. I think that, you know, there is more and more in the communities people that are doing seed saving and sharing seeds so that you don't have to buy seed. And, you know, I think, again, it's like if you are a gardener, if you enjoy that stuff, it's just connecting with what's going on in your area. You know, people are creating seed banks, you know, to preserve, you know, the little bit of stuff that's still around that hasn't been disseminated by you know, by the big, you know, corporations. So there still are some alternatives.
Well, we've only got 2 minutes left here, and we want everybody to know to hop onto your website, freshthemovie.com. There's new updates all the time, blogging, and if you want to get a DVD for your community, for your church, for your school or any nonprofit organization, you can order it from freshthemovie.com, and it can really bring the community together.
I just want to let you know you're such an inspiration for us all. You really give new meaning to delivery of happiness here, not only you know, for mothers that are about ready to give birth, and congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much.
And so basically here, in short, Fresh seeks to empower us by showing us how we're the creators of our reality, not just passive bystanders to a world going in the wrong direction. And while being creators means taking responsibility for what's happening, is also the way, you know, we can stand up and make change. And, it really is very empowering what you're doing. It's really exciting.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I was very honored that you chose to have me speak with you for this hour, and I enjoyed it. And, you know, I hope you have many, many more great, great shows, and that you continue to service your community in that way.
Well, thank you, Anna, for being with us, and maybe you can take a nap or have some fresh fruit grown from a local farmer. So if anyone if anyone leaves the show with anything, I would say support your local farmer. We even have local farmers that raise beef and pork and lamb, and so support them.
Great. Great. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye now.
So remember, freshthemovie.com. And
you're listening to the TazandPaulaShow.com. That's our website, TazandPaulaShow.com. And Taz is T-A-Z-Z.
And it's spelled out A-N-D. And also, you can hop onto our Facebook, facebook.com/TazandPaulaShow. And we have Twitter also. So that's twitter.com/TazandPaula. So we appreciate all comments. We love to hear from you. Thank you.